It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we are, off and running on this 26th day of April, 2023. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb, too. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room, the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time, all time zones in between, and the great globe round. And where if you do jump in into the aforementioned Mary, Wacky, Zany, etc., you'll be greeted by early arrivers Anatole and Claire across the pond, and Irish Dave and Squeaky, and capably moderated by Horn Chief Agronomist and Chief Mathematician and Bud Trimmer Emeritus, Roger, in Oregon. Hi, I'm Robin. I got a lot of explaining to do. And we will get to that. Well, no, we'll get to that right now. But please, if you're listening to the podcast, as opposed to, say, listening live, and whatever time that is that you listen to the podcast, do us all a favor, please, and, like and subscribe to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening on. Leave a comment. Say anything you like. And share it out on social media and tell your friends all about it, because this really is something special that we have going on here that's been going on for 20 years. More or less. Next month will be 20 years since I began sitting. I think it is next month. 20 years since I first went over to the radio station in America's fifth smallest radio market and began filling in for my dear, dear friend, Dr. Bill O'Brien. And, well, we were off and running then. So it helps to grow the program. It really, really does. Yes, we are live today. I'm sorry about yesterday. Let me promise you that it was not a matter of playing hooky. It's not that the day was so warm and gorgeous and not a cloud in the sky, or if there was a cloud, that it was high and fluffy and puffy and beautiful, that I just said, to heck with it, I'm off down a trail. A, I don't do that. B, as compared to what yesterday was, I wish I had. Our story begins, and I know I'm getting ahead of myself. I'll get to the thank yous in a second. Our story begins, actually, 2 days ago, when my son and his beloved took the car to go across to get diapers and baby wipes and things like that at the store. And he called to tell me that the air pressure light indicator had come on the car. And that's, oh, no. Well, oh, yes. And so he put a can of Fix-A-Flat in it. And then yesterday, I took off, in plenty of time, mind you, I took off to go over to Wally World, where I had bought the tires in the first place, and they had a road hazard warning. And it meant that I would probably get them replaced, or at least prorated and warranted. Save me a little bit of coin. The best laid plans of wombats and women gang after glee. In theory, that was how it was going to work. In practice, it didn't work at all. So they checked out I left the car with them and went off to just browse some of the shops. Browsing only, believe me. And Dr. Bill had, in fact, I mentioned Dr. Bill. Dr. Bill had asked me to maybe shop for a computer for him because he wants to get back on the air some and start doing again what he formerly had done ever so well. And so I'm hoping that is going to be a thing that happens. And so I was wandering along and I popped into a little local Asian place for a bowl of soup and was sitting there slurping merrily away and having some avocado slices. And love avocado. And the phone rings, and I see that it's Walmart, and I answer them. Is this Robin? Yeah, this is Robin. And, you know, when you pick up the phone, and let's say it's the police, and they say, could you come down to the station for a little bit? That's never a good call. If it's something that doesn't concern you, they'll tell you what it is and ask you to come down. But if it's bad and they want to screw with your life, could you come down to the station for a minute? Down to the precinct, whatever. This is a little like that. I mean, not in terms of law breakage or anything, but come back to the automotive center is never a good thing, because if they've just done the work, they send you the text, you go down there, you pay your money, and you go away. Now we're at this point in time. At this point in time, it's like 4:45 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and they proceed to explain to me that the tires are unsafe to travel upon. That for some reason or another, there is no tread on either of the passenger side tires. The other side tires are worn, and in fact, it's the driver's side rear tire that has the hole in it. And these were tires with 65,000 miles of tread life on them, and I had put 38,000 miles on them, so where they were almost, very nearly, you know, at least a third more of their life in them. And I said, no, ma'am, we need to warranty these tires out. I said, great, stand not upon the hour of your warranting, but warrant at once. And that's when things went sideways. It didn't get ugly or anything like that. No, it wasn't. No, it was just the kind of absurdism that seems to haunt my existence. And they were patient in explaining that all their warranty work had to be done on this one particular computer, but that Walmart had decided to get away from that particular computer and the particular system that was running on that particular computer, and they had installed a new system, and they could find where I bought the tires and bought the road hazard warranty, and they acknowledged the tread, the life that was supposed to be left on these tires. And then they said, and I was beginning to get a little verklempt. And they said, here's the problem, ma'am. your warranty's in the old computer, but we can only do warranty work in the new computer. And we have no way of getting your warranty in the old computer over to the new computer. And at this point, I was getting frustrated and said, okay, how much are four new skins? And he gave me a quote, and I'm like, well, that's more money than I have. And he said, but that wouldn't really solve your problem. I said, how would it not? And he said, well, we still got to get you warranted. We got the tires. Ain't no need for you to be buying new tires. You're going to get them. We just got to figure out how to get your warranty out of the old computer and into the new one. And at that point in time, I confess, I was puddling up a little bit. And I got to give them credit, though. This is Walmart. This is Walmart in West Virginia. And women will understand. Guys have a predilection for talking about a woman in a woman's presence as though she is not there. And so these three guys are talking amongst themselves, and they're not being hateful or anything, but it's like I've turned to vapor, and I don't exist anymore, and I'm not there, and they got everything right. Yeah, we see right here where she bought the tires. Well, can you see where she got the tread life warranty? Yes, right here. Well, how much tread life is there left on them tires? Well, there ain't no tread life left on them, so they ain't nothing to warrant. Yeah, there is. Cause I checked her odometer, and it's there's only 38,000 miles on them tires, and they 65,000 mile tires. She's entitled to a warranty, and so I was feeling like crap and stressing out. But at the same time, I'm going, well, I'll be dipped. They're getting it right. But then I was a little bit worked up and. Yeah, my lower eyelids were filling up with tears, and all of a sudden one of them looks at me and goes, oh, ma'am, please don't cry. We can't handle crying around here. And it wasn't, I don't know if it was grief or frustration. I was trying not to be angry. And meanwhile, I'm looking at Minnie Mouse on my watch, and she's telling me that it's 5:15. I'm like, well, show's screwed. And so I got home about halfway through what would have been halfway through yesterday's program. And I don't want to just start the program off with a string of obscenities or anything, but for a while, all I could do was sit around going F-word, 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 F-word. And then I said it a few more times, like 1,000. Because, you know, my life. But the best part was, no, we're going to get it done for you, ma'am. What it is, though, you got to come back here Friday. You need to be here at 7 o'clock in the morning Friday to talk to Roy. Because that's when Roy will be here. Swear to God, if he had called him Godot, it could not have been any more absurd. Yet Roy will be here at 7 o'clock, and Roy will be able to figure out a way to do this. I said, you can't call Roy. No, nobody. Why can't? Because nobody can call Roy. At which point in time, I'm beginning to wonder if he's some sort of Byzantine prince, this Roy. I mean, Roy, after all, is an anglicization of the French roi. Means king. I said, well, in the meantime, what do I do? And he said, well, what I'd do if I was you, ma'am, I'd go over there and get me three cans of that Fix-A-Flat and just try to limp along as best you can till you can get back here at 7 o'clock Friday morning. Which I then did. I said, well, did you at least see if you could plug the tire until... No, because we couldn't get you into the computer system, because we couldn't get you out of the computer system, which meant we couldn't get you even into the bay, and we couldn't get your car up so that we could get the tire off. We didn't take nothing off. And so now I'm not only frustrated, terrified. But I made it back home. Everything's okay. Everything's safe. And just trying to sit tight until Friday morning at 7. I'll actually be getting up at 5. So I can be there at 7 to talk to Roy, who I'm told will be able to tell me how to get back to Oz. I mean, be able to tell me how to get my tires warranted. It shouldn't be this complicated, but it is. And so that is where I was. Yes, living a life of indolent luxury in the Walmart Automotive Center. And of course, I had a show all ready to go, just plumb stacks of stories. And because the news cycle is about 15 microseconds long, well, it's a whole new program today. Darlene, leave me alone. Darlene in Connecticut. Jeez, Robin. You're never satisfied. At least they didn't clock you. Them boys got all the pronouns right for once. Oh, God, and there you were playing it up with the waterworks, too, you silly woman. I wish I could... I'm not that good an actor. I can't do the cry-on-demand thing. But it just kind of got a little overwhelmed. I never... In the before time, I probably would have said some choice words and got a little red in the face, but never the first tear would have fallen. You silly woman. Darlene, you get the first cowbell of the evening. The waterworks. Really? Well, you know, that's euphoria. And so the adventure is not over. One would think that if I get there at 7 o'clock on Friday morning, everything will be fine and dandy by the time 5 o'clock rolls around and the mic goes hot and the lights go on. And I hope it plays that way. But I got to figure out what one wears to meet Roy, the great and powerful. So here we are. It's just another day. And a heck of a Wednesday it is. And every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so, as a consequence, we begin with thank... Well, it's a little late for me to say we're beginning with it, but the thank you always begins the program. Thank you so much to Emilio and to Ralphs. Thank you so. Thank you to Mark and Peter. Thank you to... Cecilia. Get back on Monday. the fundraising goal stands at $2,170. And that's, and I think, you know, I think that's part of it. It's why I got a little worked up, because it's frightening when you're facing, you know, electricity, water, everything. And then God only knows what they're going to tell me when the wheels literally come off. It can make you a bit of a mess. So we're at two. Let's be fair. I wasn't here yesterday. I wanted to be, but I wasn't. So we will call it 1,870, and we'll write that one off on me. 1870 to finish the month of April. That's today, tomorrow, and Friday. And it doesn't look promising for finishing the month of April in fully funded form. Because, well, that is twice what we should be at for 3 days remaining in the program month. See how it goes. Ralph's asked, so you're going to have to dress like Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz? I wish. Might get me a little further down the yellow brick road. And then Matt. Bless your heart, and in a good way. I swear, Matt in San Francisco says, if you start Friday's program with Roy called in sick, I'm going to find that Walmart myself. You can probably just do it sonically by listening to the sounds of my wails and cries. Or yeah, Randy Radar, when the rubber hits the no, this is more like when the wheels come off kind of thing. So we'll get through the program this evening. Claire, thank you for getting us started. Dear, thank you so much. All the way from across the pond, Claire gets us started this evening, and so we're down to 1845. Thank you, Claire. Thank you. It means a lot. And hopefully we'll knock out some... The most immediate stuff is dealing with the car, dealing with the power bill, and you get the idea. But where to begin today? Well, we could start with, because it occurred to me with Monday's program, we made it through 3 hours, and it was almost a nitwit Nero-free program, which is kind of amazing, really. And it's so easy to just let the orange adipose wad of insecurities and petty grievances overtake us. But it was very nearly Trump-free on Monday. And you know that's not going to last, because, of course, today his trial began. The civil trial. We have waited low and yea verily long and long for the beginning of the E. Jean Carroll versus Donald J. Trump lawsuit. And today it happened. It happened in federal court in Manhattan. And Nitwit Nero wanted to be anywhere but there, and since it's a civil trial, he doesn't have to show up. He doesn't have to do anything, really, except sit around, you know, on the golf course at Mag-a-Loco or thumbing stupidities into Tripe Social or whatever. But nonetheless, he made his presence felt as the program began. Or as the trial began, because he couldn't resist running over to Tripe Social. Thank you, Joy. and sleazing all over her. It's still unknown as to whether he will show up or will not. But the takeaway on this is that it's a defamation case, and he's continuing to defame her, which makes me think that her, you know, he's supposed to be a hotshot lawyer, Joe Tacopina is, but he really doesn't seem that great. And while I don't have a great deal of sympathy, there is a certain amount of empathy that goes to anyone who is trying to do the job of a lawyer and do so even remotely ethically and represent Nitwit Nero at the same time, to the point that that the two are probably mutually exclusive. So, lo and behold, U.S. District Judge Lewis Kaplan a move that a law school professor over on MSNBC, Melissa Murray from the NYU University School of Law, said, I don't think I can ever recall a judge chastising a litigant in this way, making it very clear that the litigant was not to do anything that might provoke public outrage toward the jury or even to promote political violence. We used to didn't, kind of used to didn't have to do that. Because back in the day, we were still somewhat committed to what I call the Tinkerbell theory of justice. As long as everybody believes in it, it keeps living. That good ship has sailed and sunk. And so when Nitwit Nero began grumbling into his phone to post on Tripe Social, he said he called the lawsuit a made-up scam. He said that E. Jean Carroll's lawyer is a political operative, and it's all financed by a big political donor that they said didn't exist. And then, like I said, he defamed her. Her allegation is that the rape took place at Bergdorf Goodman in New York City. So he referred to her as Mrs. Bergdorf Goodman. This is a false and fraudulent story. Witch hunt. And went on and on and on. So before the court convened on this morning, her lawyer, E. Jean Carroll's lawyers, went to the judge and showed the judge, Kaplan, the microblogs from the microbrain, causing Judge Kaplan to address Joe Tacopina, saying, what seems to be the case is that your client is basically endeavoring, certainly, to speak to his quote-unquote public, but more troublesome to the jury in this case. And then he told Joe Tacopina to get his client under control. And this is where I begin to think that Joe Tacopina is no Lawyer Daggett. Lawyer Daggett, Lawyer Daggett. She draws that Lawyer Daggett like a gun. With a presumably straight face, Joe Tacopina looked at this United States District Court judge, clothed in all the majesty and authority of Article 3 of the Constitution of the United States with a lifetime seat on the bench based on his continuing good behavior. There are at least ethical rules that apply to Judge Kaplan. It's not like he's Clarence Thomas or something. And Kaplan said, Kaplan read the Riot Act, kind of literally a riot act, because, well, Nitwit Nero is not averse to inciting riots. And Takapina responded, this is just astonishing. Here's all I can tell you. I will speak to my client and ask him to refrain from any further posts regarding this case. I'll do the best I can, Your Honor. That's all I can say. No, there's a lot more that can be said. He can say, Your Honor, outside of the hearing of the jury, I would like to request leave to be relieved as counsel in this case. Yeah. And as the trial progresses, if Nitwit Nero actually takes the stand, no one expects him to, because you cannot put him on the stand because he will commit perjury, and then the lawyer will have to go to the judge and say, Your Honor, could we have a little conference outside the hearing of the jury? And that's when he says, Your Honor, I'd like to be relieved as counsel because the case presents matters which upon which I may not litigate. And everybody at the bar will understand that what the lawyers just said is my client is lying his filthy ass off, and I want no part of it because I like my law license. But it seems a bit presumptuous to look at the aforementioned United States Federal District Judge and say that he will ask his client to please do as he's been told by the court. Ask. The operative word here is ask. I suppose I must praise the restraint of U.S. District Judge Lewis Kaplan, because Kaplan did not say to him, come here, bub. Now listen up. You don't go and ask him to stop doing this shit. You go and tell him to stop doing this shit, and there is a big difference between the two. And if you don't have enough courage to tell him to stop this, then tell him I will be happy to hail him into court and tell him to his face to stop this. That much was not actually, that didn't actually happen. But this is still pretty wild as civil trials in U.S. District Court go. And I'm looking forward to the testimony coming out because, among other things, the jury will hear. It's already been ruled on. The jury will be allowed to hear the Access Hollywood tape, where he says, you know, sometimes you just have to pop a Tic Tac because you never know when you're going to have to kiss one of them. You never know because you can, or, you know, grab them by the pussy. You can do anything when you're a celebrity. And then women who have been forcibly touched, kissed, whatever, by Trump, without their consent, they will also be heard from. This is going to be wild because, among other things, from the reporting by Mother Jones magazine, Carol's attorneys told jurors they would have witnesses. Carol herself and two other women with similar stories testify in graphic detail about how Trump forcefully assaulted them following a playbook he laid out in the infamous Access Hollywood tape. But Trump's attorneys laid the groundwork for a scathing attack of Carroll, mocking her story and sneering at details, saying she had made up the encounter with Trump because she wanted to be a celebrity. Oh, Jesus God. E. Jean Carroll was already a celebrity. She was an advice columnist. And this entire case, trigger warning, y'all. If you need, if sexual assault and sexual abuse, if it's triggering, take a moment. Because E. Jean Carroll has already described the circumstances of what happened. She was at Bergdorf Goodman that day. It was the 1990s. It might have been 94, 95, 96. As is often the case with a victim of sexual assault, she's having a hard time with the calendric details. But she was up on the couture and lingerie floor of Bergdorf Goodman, which officials, management of the store have already confirmed was not visited a lot. It didn't have a lot of heavy traffic from day to day. And Nitwit Nero comes up to her and goes,
"Hey, you're that advice lady from the newspaper, right?"
And they start to talking because, you know, a woman simply talking to a man can be dangerous. Because simply talking to someone like Nitwit Nero can provide him justification for accessing her body against her will. Which is exactly what happened. He asked her to help him pick out some lingerie, presumably for his wife. Sure, Donald. And then gets her in one of the dressing rooms, closes the door, blocks, and rapes her. And I have no, maybe it's confirmation bias, possibly. But I have no problem believing her in this regard. And she told friends at the time about it, who confirm what they heard. And she has gone on to describe how she has not had an intimate relationship with anyone since that happened. Sexual assault is a crime not of passion, as it is still erroneously referred to in all too many statutes. It is a crime of violence. And it leaves in its wake the same kind of trauma that any violence does. Perhaps more so. But this is not actually a rape trial. He's not criminally charged with rape. This is merely a civil suit seeking damages for the defamation of her character when she came out with her account. And he said,
"Well, you know, she's really not my type."
And called her crazy, insane. Again, which is nothing new when it comes to men's responses upon having been accused of sexual assault. So we've got that, and so much more. It's certainly not earth-shattering news, or really that surprising anymore. But we had another outbreak of freedom today in Illinois. Actually, it was April 12th. The story hit today. April 12th, a 79-year-old man named Ettore Lachey, Ettore Lachey, walked up to his neighbor, William Martys, who was 59. Martys was clearing his yard with a leaf blower. You know where this is going, don't you? Because Merca. There have been evenings on this program, for instance, when Scott has been on the air with me, when the grounds crew out at Shea Guru have come around with the leaf blower. I find leaf blowers obnoxious. Noisy, gross, incredible wastes of energy. And from an ecological standpoint, leaves fall, leaves rot, leaves build soil. As our pal Joy in Ann Arbor has pointed out, leaves often provide habitat for living things like butterflies as they overwinter in their cocoons. Life has a way of knowing how to take care of itself on this little planet. But there are people out there who are offended by leaves that fall places that I suppose they should just stay on the tree. And so consequently, we have leaf blowers. Now, I don't know if these two men got into it over the noise of the leaf blower, but the bottom line is that they started arguing, and then the 79-year-old pulled out his freedom protector and shot the 59-year-old man in the head. Lake County, Illinois State's Attorney Eric Reinhart said, "Once again, easy access to firearms has turned a dispute into a deadly crime. We will support the victims and seek justice in the courtrooms." The 79-year-old apparently dropped the gun and ran away. When they got there, the paramedics saw Mr. Martys lying in his driveway. He was pronounced dead at a nearby hospital. The cops found where the killer had dropped his freedom protector. Upon investigation, cops found out that, according to the documentation, that he had various perceived grievances with Martys. If you listen hard, you can probably hear Fox News TV Radio Rwanda still playing in his empty home. God bless America. So a man who made it 59 years couldn't survive a 79-year-old obstreperous man. And so there are two counts of first-degree murder lodged against Lachey. I don't know. The sheriff's office said, "I'm happy Mr. Marty's family can begin the closure and healing process as we bring his murderer to justice." Shot his neighbor in the head over perceived grievances. Oh, and thank you. Thank you to Ralphs and to Charlene in Rogues Island. Ralph said, I'm offering a $25 challenge for Robin's tires. Thank you, Ralphs. And Charlene said, offering a $75 challenge, and when it's met, I'll add another $50. So all in all, that's if we can raise $100, that will turn into $250. If we can raise $100. And that'll get us down from 1870. From 1870 to 1670. And that is so helpful. Thank you. Thank you, Ralphs. And thank you so much, Charlene. Charlene says, best regards from Rogues Island. Thank you. And if we can knock that out quickly, that'd be great. Because I just got a notification on my phone. I got to wrap the program up about 30 minutes early this evening. I know, it's been a rough couple of days. I have a Q&A that I have to do online for Devil Put the Coal in the Ground. And I'm happy to try to help out with the promotions for that film, because the message, some of you have seen it now. The message is so profound about what continues to happen here in West Virginia and Central Appalachia, and the greater Central Appalachia area. No, that just sounds awful. Randy Radar says, at one point, the Homeowners Association had three leaf blowers going at the same time in the same place in my backyard, I suspected, but could not prove that it was to intentionally annoy me. That's the thing with leaf blowers. They don't have to intentionally annoy you. They can negligently annoy you. Because they're just annoying. The world's largest, most obnoxious hair dryers. And all to move leaves from one place to another place. Not even rake them into a pretty little pile for kids to jump and cavort in. Steve in New York, dead in his driveway. Let's be clear, there is no justice here. No. And, well, at least in Illinois, there's probably not a stand-your-ground law for him to cite. But holy smokes, that's a lot. A leaf blower. But then again, knocking on doors, that'll get you shot. Turning in a driveway will get you shot. Going to the movies will get you shot. Going to the grocery store will get you shot. Being black will get you shot. Being black and trans will get you shot. Because the patriotic proponents of freedom are out of hand. And they've decided it's time to water the tree of liberty with the blood of patriots and tyrants, and it's the natural manure, so how do you get to the point where you pull a gun on somebody over a leaf blower, or whatever your beef is? John in Central PA sent me a video the other day, and I followed the little... down the little rabbit hole to find out a little bit more, but it was an old man out for a stroll on the sidewalk somewhere in New Mexico. He had a pair of over-the-ear headphones on and was shambling, and I don't say that derogatorily. I mean, his gait was not good. Shambling down the sidewalk with what appeared to be, best guess, because I do know a little bit about handguns, what appeared to be a .50 caliber Desert Eagle just hanging in his hand as he strode along. Don't know what kind of headphones they were. Hopefully the incident ended with no one being shot. But there's no way to address that situation without running the risk of Grandpa Simpson trying to use it, and it's a danger to himself, it's a danger to others. He might try to use it on somebody if they approached him, because if you're paranoid enough that you will walk down a neighborhood street in what the original post said was a nice neighborhood somewhere in New Mexico, I don't know, Albuquerque, Taos, Santa Fe, don't know. But just walk along the sidewalk with that swinging in your hand from... But then if he actually... I have fired a 50 caliber Desert Eagle handgun. Yeah, I've fired 44 Magnums, 357 Magnums. They got a hell of a recoil. A 45 caliber semi-automatic like a Colt 1911 has a hell of a recoil. That 50 caliber Desert Eagle is like nothing else I've ever fired. I mean, it will literally knock your shoulder out of socket. It's so forceful. But again, I don't know if those were wireless Bluetooth headphones or what, or if it was listening to the latest from Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. But this place is terrifying. And now we find out that, not at all surprising, the firearms problem, such as it exists in New York City, where they try to at least... not turn it in, have it turn into a free fire zone. Well, there's a whole bunch of data out, and I'm sure the Republicans don't like this. There's a whole bunch of data out from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives that roll from 2017 to 2021, which is before the Bruin decision that gutted the gun permitting system in the state of New York. And that thing in itself remains a judicial what the moment, because the city of New York had already pulled the ordinance in question, but the Supremes went ahead and ruled on something that wasn't even before them anymore, because they needed to, I don't know, fillate their benefactors at the National Ruble Association or some such. But the data from 2017 to 2021 shows that there were 12,910 firearms that were taken in by the police as a result of crimes committed there. 12,910 guns. 93% of those 12,910 guns were bought somewhere besides New York. The national out-of-state average is 28%. The second highest city for out-of-state guns is Baltimore. And the New York number is insanely higher than second place Baltimore. Where did they come from? Well, in a way, you could say it's sort of like a low-key civil war. 1,736 of the seized guns used in crimes in New York City came from children. One thousand six hundred and sixty-seven guns came from Virginia. 1,421 of them came from South Carolina Stan, the home of American sedition, as Charlie Pierce calls it. And in either of those three states, Georgia, Virginia, or South Carolina, I'm sure West Virginia's on the list somewhere, too. It is easier to buy a handgun than it is to get a fishing license. And they don't get that worked up about straw man purchases either.
No, I'm buying these 15 pistols for myself. I'm a collector.
And then, of course, they wind up in places like Baltimore, New York, Detroit, Chicago. And this is why we need national gun legislation. Because maintaining the freedom to purchase firearms in the Confederate states in order to placate the tender, dainty, snowflakey feelings of the pasty-faced, doughy white guys there and here in Alabama and Mississippi Stan and the rest of the Confederacy is an ugly, bloody mistake that is paid by people who don't even want those firearms in their communities. What's curious, however, and this comes from an article in Politico, even though Jim Jacketoff Jordan and marginal trailer queen went up and grunted and barked and brayed and bleated about crime in New York. Fact of the matter is, as the Politico article explains, the region the Big Apple comprises most of is far and away the safest part of the U.S. mainland when it comes to gun violence, where the regions Florida and Texas belong to have per capita firearm death rates, homicides and suicides, 3 to 4 times higher than New York's. On a regional basis, it's the southern swath of the country, CONFEDERACY, in cities and rural areas alike, where the rate of deadly gun violence is most acute, regions where Republicans have dominated state governments for decades. And so what we are doing by not federalizing gun laws, and that's one thing we don't talk about enough, is the fact that constitutionally speaking, the Congress has the right to federalize certain issues. The Congress can say the state legislatures have no business in this issue. This is strictly a federal matter. That was done to a certain extent, for instance, with the marriage bill that made its way through the Congress and was signed into law by President Biden. It is in the purview of the Congress to federalize issues that in which it wishes to make across-the-board statements of law that will apply to every state. And that needs to happen with firearms. It would definitely be a step forward. But because we are ruled by a minority in this country, who think it is more important for pasty-faced, doughy white guys to feel good about themselves than it is for, well, I don't know, 9-year-olds to become 10-year-olds, we have this patchwork of gun laws and a Supreme Court that is willing to strike down the halfway sane ones and prop up the ones that are crazier than an outhouse rat. Stephen New York says, pondering my childhood. When I was a kid, we used to play pranks by knocking on people's doors and running. It was a fucking juvenile hoot. Today, who knew that being a dumb kid could be lethal? Yeah, you light that bag of flaming poo, and the next thing you know, you got a 9mm round through your head. But again, Steve, everybody, understand it's a choice, and this is the America that the National Rifle Association wants. An America where everybody has a gun and everybody has their gun pointed at another American's head. They've said that that's what they want. They've said it the only person who can stop a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun, despite all the evidence to the contrary. They've said that the Second Amendment that is specifically directed toward the maintenance of a militia means that Cletus, if he's got enough money, can go down and buy himself a weapon of war with a 100-round capacity magazine and go wild in a school or a grocery store or a movie theater. One of these days we're going to get tired of it and we will do something about it. But they're not tired of it in Alabama, and they're not tired of it in Georgistan, and they're not tired of it in South Carolinistan, and they're not tired of it in Tennistan. And they like lording it over the Yankee states because it feels like they're getting some payback for what they done to us in 1865. Yeah, they've been South Carolina stand, you're right. Subject line, Vlad. Vlad loves for Americans to kill each other. And you'll notice that they're not running around, no. He doesn't want, you get the idea. But yeah, he loves chaos. Stephen, New York says, I'm crazier than the shithouse rat, I admit it. It's time to repeal Marbury versus Madison by constitutional amendment or however we do it. The notion that nine turds in black robes get to tell the people what a document whose first three words are we the people means is stupid. At least I think so. You can make a credible argument for that, Steve, but the problem is a credible argument and a good faith argument are not the same thing as an argument made by a Republican. When somebody like, and this was years ago, but I remember it, when somebody like former Arkansas governor and presidential candidate and diabetes phony baloney cure salesman pastor brother Mike Huckstaby says that we need to get rid of Marbury versus Madison, well, you know, it probably wouldn't be the best of ideas. And so here we are into the second hour of the program. There's $100 worth of challenge money on the table. 10 people at 10 bucks, one at 100, and we would get down to, what, 16, no, yeah, 16, 20? And that would be magnificent. Take a little of the heat off. A lot of heat still on. And it may wind up in the program not being here. The fundraising goal that we set up here is not for any lavish lifestyle. Tucker Carlson, the Hannity job, none of those punks could live an ordinary human being's life. They have to have their woven cloth of gold shower curtains and their gold toilets and whatnot. Or else, how is life even worth living? Breaking news. Let's see. The Republican legislature of Montanistan have censured Zoe Zephyr for having the unmitigated gall to tell that miserable body that they will have blood on their hands when they take gender affirming care away from trans kids in Montana. She was right. She's still right. But they censured her. On the other hand, and thank you, Joy in Ann Arbor, on the other hand, the Republicans themselves have said some pretty scurrilous things. Speaker of the Montana House, one Matt Redger from Kalispell.
Well, he said, it is heartbreaking to hear infanticide referred to as a practice of medicine.
In other words, accusing women who have abortions of committing infanticide when, in fact, it is not an infant. And then there's Brad Tashida. This guy's a real piece of crap. He said, the womb is the only, and you know what, I've heard this before, and it's disgusting, and the fact that I've seen it before on, like, men's rights forums and incel forums and the Nazi forums and the like, kind of tells you how, it tells you the circles that somebody like Brad Tashida moves in, but it also tells you how information flows within the right-wing sewer in this country. Brad Tashida said, the womb is the only organ in a woman's body that serves no specific purpose to her life or well-being. It is truly a sanctuary. Does it not? I do. I love hearing men talking about the workings of women's internal organs. It is truly a sanctuary. And then, let's see. Representative John Fuller, the sponsor of the trans medical ban, said,
if you vote to postpone this bill, you voted to allow the sexual mutilation of children.
Because see, whether it is women's reproductive health or the care of transgender girls and boys, in the state of Montana and the Republican Party generally, telling the truth, there will be blood on your hands, will get you censured. Telling the truth will get you censured, but lying copiously and constantly will get you to be, well, part of the MAGA majority. Representative John Fuller, Maggot, also said,
allowing transgender women to participate in women's sports, just wrong. I believe this will result in the destruction of women's sports.
Who has never given a good goddamn about women's sports before? I bet you if you looked, you'd find out that he has never been to so much as a softball game or basketball game or a volleyball game. None of it. Oh, Fuller apparently spends a lot of time thinking about children's genitals, which to me is a red flag. He said,
A child experiencing bodily dissatisfaction.
It ain't dissatisfaction, you dumb shit. Needs care, counseling, compassion, and guidance addressing the real cause of the distress. You mean gender dysphoria, dipshit? No, it's probably demons.
Protecting children from surgical procedures that are purely cosmetic and irreversible is necessary and proper.
And yet, they have not banned vaginoplasty or breast augmentation for underage girls in Montanistan. And they also haven't banned unconsented to surgeries upon intersex babies in Montanistan. They damn sure haven't said a word about circumcision of little boy babies. Because God likes all that. And then there's debt limit bill that just got passed a little bit ago in the House of Representatives. Don't worry, this thing's a pile of shit. Among other things, they're throwing hissies about those lazy, good-for-nothing poors out there eating food again. I wish I was kidding, but I don't. I'm not kidding. They want stricter requirements for people who receive EBT, any kind of welfare assistance, Medicaid. This thing will hopefully go nowhere. I don't know. I don't know if it can get 50. No. But the question is, what will Joe to the Mansion Born do? And how about Curtsy and Kirsten Cinema? The most hilarious part of it all is some of the Republicans voting for this trash today grew up in homes where they could not have survived without public assistance. So among other things, what the Republicans wanted in their wish list was for able-bodied adults, define that, between the ages of 18 and 55, unless they are employed at least 20 hours a week or meet other criteria, they can only get food stamps for 3 months in 3 years. I don't think you can make that. You can't buy enough top ramen to get you through 3 years on 3 months' worth of EBT. They're vicious. They're hateful. They're bloodthirsty. So the provision would put about 900,000 people between the ages of 50 and 55 at risk of losing their food assistance unless they get out there and work, whether they're able to or not, whether there are jobs or not. It also says people going Medicaid have to go to work. They have to perform community service or something. They have to spend 80 hours a month participating in an employment program or earn a certain monthly income. They want them dead. It's simple enough. Yeah, you're right. Going back to the gun stuff. News Ninja Gene says, yeah, watering the tree of liberty with tyrannical 8-year-olds. It really does become obvious how vicious it is when you look at it that way. Steve in New York.
It's the crab legs, Henry. It's the crab legs.
Yeah, Louis Asparagus going, yeah, I was right there in the grocery store. Well, it was one of my constituents. And they said, you know what? You know what? You know what, Representative Gohmert? I was standing there in the HEB, and there's this welfare family in front of me. Had the whole buggy loaded up with Alaska King crab legs. We can't buy no crab legs. We live on beans and rice, like good Americans and Texans. Elfer. But, yeah. Listen, I don't want to make the same mistake I made the other night. Somebody is on the stress line. Y'all, we've got, if we can raise $100, we can turn it into $250. Pretty please. Just $100. 10 at 10, 2 at 50, 4 at 25, 8 at 12, 50. However it comes, because, not mine. Stress the hell out. It's unpleasant staring into the abyss and knowing you don't have the toll for it. But let's go over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Robin. It's Paul from Parts Unknown.
Oh, my God, Paul. It's so good to hear from you.
Yeah, it's good to hear you, too. I emailed you yesterday, calling in. I know I've been gone a while, but there's just been some changes happening here for me, and I just wanted to share them with the horn because they're relevant, I think, to the economy.
Do please.
So I just haven't been able to write in or call in. I haven't been able to write in because I've been super busy, and I haven't been able to call in partially due to work. What basically happened is my company has been saying, well, a lot of companies have been saying for the past 2 years, especially with the great inflation going on. Oh, thank you so much. We have emails from the company saying, thank you so much for record profits. We've never done better, and we keep doing better every year. And that's been the case for the past 2 or 3 years. But due to my company at the site I work at specifically makes components for COVID test kits, which is one of the reasons that we've been doing so well during the pandemic. But with the aid or the emergency response aid ending next month, they started at the end of the year to go into cost-cutting measures. And, so we went from thanks for the great best year you could ever we've ever had, and we're making huge profits, to we're now laying people off and you're allowed no overtime for months on end.
Capitalism.
And so for cost cutting and everything of that nature. So basically we're limited to 8 hours a day, and in those 8 hours, six and a half have to be working on work orders, and I can't take breaks back to back, and it's a whole thing. So it's just been hard to call in because I can't. Usually when I call in, like now, I stack my 2 15-minute paid breaks together and take a half hour. But they didn't want people doing that, and I was able to get a special dispensation this week because I'm working on something that you can't stop, and it takes hours to do. So I spend my entire, instead of taking a break in the morning and the afternoon, I spend my entire morning, like 5 hours every day this week, doing this thing. And so I have a little breathing room, and I haven't been able to write because we've been we fostered through a dog rescue another mama for the year. Aww. And she had three puppies. I sent you the picture in the email.
They're adorable.
And, they are adorable. They're very cute. One's already been adopted. We've got two left on the mama, but it's just, you know, it's more time, more energy. You know, we're losing like a possession a day to dogs chewing them. They're very mouthy and teething, and they're just grabbing whatever they can find. No matter how many toys we buy them, they find something else more interesting. My site is part of a division of about 36 other sites, and a lot of those other sites are doing very poorly in sales. Luckily, my site, the demand is going up. So you've got people way above the people at the site saying cost cut, cost cut, cost cut, and lay off people, and my site saying our demand's going up, we need to hire more people. And so they have a packaging section that they're very low on people for. mostly because they lay a lot of them off in February. And so the only overtime I can get is in the packaging department, and I'm expecting a bad year. I'm also found that due to inflation, we can't maintain our lifestyle like we used to because inflation's eating over it. We were living off overtime, and I didn't realize it. So this might be the only overtime I'm getting all year. So I've been working 50-hour weeks, taking 48-hour weeks for like the past 2 or 3 months. Been taking care of puppies and dealing with just general things going on. So that's why I've been pretty silent. But this my company is following a lot of what companies are doing. I knew the people they laid off. You know, the speed that we went from essential workers to expendable nearly ripped my eyebrows off when the wind changed, and it was just not a happy thing.
Wow. End stage capitalism is the most brutal form of capitalism, and so it's. I mean, I hate it that it's happening, but I'm not surprised, Paul. Were you?
For our site, yes. I'm not now, but I mean, it was just. I mean, a lot of people were shocked. I mean, you get those emails from the CEO or whatever in the higher up saying, thank you for such a great year and thank you for breaking records and all this stuff. And we did it together and now bye. And I understand it's definitely a, what have you done for me lately? But where our demand's going up, they're finally hiring more people, but that process takes months. And so a couple of months. So I'm just, keep working and keep stashing away money because I've just got for those of you who are newer listeners, I've been with listening to Head On Radio with Robin for quite some time, well over 10 years. And when I started listening, the 2008 economic crash kind of destroyed my life, destroyed any savings I put together. I was homeless for a while. Scraping together no money. I was jobless for years. And that's fairly traumatic, but I'm definitely getting flashbacks for that. And to add, you know, extra fear on top of it, this time I've got a family and pets and everything. Last time it was literally just me. And I had no other attachments or responsibilities, not even a houseplant. So couch surfing and living on other friends' places and sleeping in my car is a much more doable thing when it's just you. But when you've got dogs and cats and, you know, a teenager, you got to think ahead.
Yeah, it's one thing to be able to pack everything into your vehicle and go somewhere. You know, when your entire world will fit in the back of a rusted out pickup truck, you can be pretty mobile and you can be pretty creative, but it's a different story entirely especially when there are young ones involved.
Yeah, and so that's what I've been doing, just saving the money. You know, my wife Leah and I, we've adjusted our expenses a bit and cut down on a few things, and they're just saving money. And I've been doing good, keeping the expenses down, saving money all year for just in case something bad happened. And then we got hit with one heck of a tax bill this year and wiped me out of my savings.
Jesus.
So that's where we are.
God, I'm sorry it's so stressful, Paul. I really am. But you know what? You're maintaining a level of, I wouldn't say equanimity or equilibrium, but just in something like fostering that dog and her puppies. I think it kind of connects you. It grounds you. To forces outside yourself, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I see that. I also put on a pretty good poker face or a Spock face, as I called it when I was younger.
Yes.
And just leave emotions out of it. I know I'm definitely talking about a picture on the radio, but the big, fluffy, fuzzy brown one on the left strudel.
Yes.
Each one of those three puppies were born at our house, each one of those puppies attached themselves to one of us, and Strudel was my fluffy buddy. He was Mama was only about 22 pounds, and Strudel is looking to be 50 pounds. His brother's going to be in the 40s of pounds, and his sister's going to be in the 30s of pounds. So they're all going to be bigger than Mama. He was nearly 17 pounds at 3 months. So Daddy was big. We don't know who he was, but he was my fluffy buddy, and we were really close to keeping him. The rule in our house is that keeping a dog, or foster failing as they call it, is sort of like turning keys to a nuclear missile. We all have to agree, and we did not. And so we adopted him. He's adopted out. He's gone to a great home. I'm happy for him, but I do miss him, and I definitely would have kept him because he's just a big fluffy ball of adorableness and very chill.
Aw, that's just sweet. So,
that's where we are.
Well, and at least you're there. So, I mean, it's hard to put. I guess it's hard to ask it, but with the layout, are you secure?
Yeah, I'm in the manufacturing department, and demand for our products is going up. My speculation is the original intent was we're not going to do overtime even though they're behind, because the demand will, this is going to be a bad economic year and the demand will drop off, and that will just let us keep our current staff through the year and then we'll reassess, was sort of my guess. But demand hasn't leveled off. It's gone up while other places it's gone down. Yeah, you have to understand, for like 32 or so of these 36 sites, their demand is down drastically, massively. They're looking to lay people off. They already have laid off about 250 people in the San Francisco area. They did that in January. San Diego. One of those cities down in L.A. How many of those are there?
Yeah, might as well call it California.
So I see no reason why they would lay me off due to not making – all I do is make money for them. It will boggle the minds of some of you, but they don't pay us what I think we're worth, and we're definitely not getting a slice of the pie. We're getting maybe a piece of the crust with our salaries, because every day, not every day, but at least once a week, I personally, but I can guarantee you almost every day in that lab, someone is holding a bottle of something that they're going to sell for much more than their yearly income.
Oh my goodness.
Occasionally you're holding a bottle that's full of stuff they're going to sell for over $500,000, and it's, you know, something you could pour in a liter bottle.
Okay.
So that you'd definitely be, as long as the demand's there, you'd definitely be shooting yourself in the foot by laying off the people that actually are manufacturing things that make you money and profit. So I'm secure, I'm good, but I thought I'd share that I'm a little bit behind on the podcasts for your show, but I heard that Tracy's wife also got laid off. And I don't know how economically the rest of the horse community is doing, but I just thought seeing it here too.
I appreciate you mentioning that. I don't think anybody's got it easy right now. At least nobody who actually works for a living.
Yeah, I was going to say. I think Jeff Bezos is doing fine.
Yeah, he's okay. And you know, Leon Scum, also known as Elon Musk, you know. He's got time to screw around with Twitter while his rockets are blowing up. So, I guess things are good for him.
I don't think good things are good for him. He's losing money faster than he made it.
Well, that's true. But he seems to be having a very mean good time along the way. But yeah, our corporate bettors have never been better. That's the weird thing about this. This particular economic landscape is that we've never really seen inflation like this at the same time that the economy is booming. And that tells you a little bit about what's going on and why. It's all profit taking.
Yeah. Well, I've heard the number 51% of the inflation is profit. And yeah, I agree. I have tried to write in and have written a couple of drafts over the months, and then obviously like the topics are irrelevant by the time I'm 2 weeks later when I'm trying to get back and edit them. But in one of the letters, I was just writing in saying Facebook's been laying people off. Twitter fired a bunch of people. We've seen these massive layoffs, and the stock market is, the Dow Jones is roughly about where it was. It's averaging about 33,000. I haven't looked in the past month or so, but that was at the time of writing it. It's not like we're seeing stocks drop and everything else. The banks having problems right now is more of a sign that's happening. But I asked my dad, who's actually, you know, was in the economic world before he retired, like, how much of this is self-inflicted? How much of this is if five of these big companies lay off 20,000 Americans each in a month, I mean, does that give you your recession?
and that's the $64 million question, isn't it?
Yeah, and then he said that's part of it. It definitely doesn't help.
So let me take you to the territory we usually work in, Paul.
Sure.
Where are we? Because you've been such a vital source of information for the pandemic. Where are we now? You know, I had the story, a week or so ago about the warnings coming out about Arcturus. And I guess.
I guess the biggest thing, I'm not too worried about that variant just yet. The biggest, just understand that we chose this. Like, this was not inevitable, and this did not have to be, but we chose to go from the pandemic to endemic. We chose to let it live among us, and it's going to swirl around, and it's going to keep mutating, and hopefully it won't mutate into something awful that puts us back at square one with how severe the symptoms are and people dying. But, I mean, invest in Pfizer and Moderna. They're going to keep making vaccines for this and get paid for it by insurance companies or the government until this thing goes away, which will probably never. There's an argument to be made that we did the most, we ended up on the most profitable choice, which is typically, I think, how most of our decisions are made. And so the higher ups have decided you're just going to live with it. And so we're going to live with it, and it's going to be around. Keep getting your boosters like you advise at the end of your show. They're free until May. My wife and I have discussed it. We have insurance. We can afford to pay for it. And if you got a shot in May, it's good for 6 months, which would be November, which is just right at the start of the flu season. So you would be losing your protection when the weather turns and you're the most, and it's going to be spreading the most. So she and I are both waiting until September, October of this year to get our next shot. And the last shot that we had was end of September, beginning of October. So you get like a yearly thing in the fall before the winter sets in, and just stay masked and watch the numbers. And that's kind of the strategy that we're going with. I know that a lot of people don't have access to insurance or don't have a job that provides it, or they pulled Medicaid or Medicare cuts in your state, whatever the reason. If you don't believe you can get easy access to it because you can't afford it, I'd recommend getting it now while it's still free and available.
Well, I'm trying to figure out, because I don't know. Did you see the latest guidance about boosters for over 65 and, I guess, 55 and up who are immunocompromised? I think it's been 3 months since my last booster. I'm wondering if I should go. I wonder if I should go for it. And I don't know.
I don't know. Well, in terms of, I don't know if they'll let you. I heard for immunocompromised people, they'll dial it back to maybe 5 months between shots. But if you just got yours a couple of months ago, you might be ineligible.
I need to ask around because I'm not, well, I mean, you know, I'm not one of these people that, the number of idiots out there in this country who, I don't know how much of it you've seen, but the, you know.
Most of the people who take the vaccine will be dead in 2 years.
What?
I'm still here.
Yeah, I mean.
But it's going to go down. And it might, and they'll probably tie it to Trump and Biden. It will probably go down as one of the stupidest decisions that America's made in modern history. Might outdo the Iraq War simply because of long COVID. There's a young man that works with me in my lab. He's been working there for about a year. And, you know, that's about how long it takes to, like, start getting personal with people and just to learn a little bit about him. And when I say young, he's in his late 20s. Okay. He caught COVID 3 years ago or some such. And his, even though he's in his 20s, and even though it's been 3 years, his long COVID symptom is, and he's not hugely overweight. Like, he's not obviously fat and can't run a mile. But his thing is, if he does any strenuous activity, just like get on one of those exercise bikes and start pedaling, after 5 minutes, he can't breathe and he's got no energy and he's gasping for air. And that symptom has not gone away. And if it doesn't, it's probably going to get worse as he gets older. And I think there's a whole slew of people just like him. And then, and 20 years later, 20, 25 years later, as they get into, as he gets to my age in the late 40s, early 50s, you're going to see some serious fallout, I think. And you're going to see tons of people with massive long COVID symptoms all over the place. And it's going to, and everyone's going to look back and go, God, that was dumb.
I mean, certain of us, yourself included, the Horn Family Community Congregation, me included, already know how dumb it was. It's almost as though we wanted to see how bad we could make it. And we've not begun to tally how awful it is.
I think part of it's also denial. I think that I haven't been in those rooms. I haven't been at those levels where those egos are bouncing around. But I think the idea of something that you can't see, that you can destroy with a spray bottle and a rag, can topple your entire empire of military structure and business and commerce. Like they can't imagine it. And that's what they say every time. No one can imagine people would fly planes in the buildings. Like, they can't imagine it. They can't.
Even though we have governmental departments whose only purpose is to imagine these things.
Oh, they write reports. I mean, what was that gentleman's name? It's not Richard Harris. He was the guy in the government that blew the whistle before 9/11 and was like sounding all the alarms before it happened. And then it did happen. And then he went to testify about the report he wrote in August to Bush, President George W. Bush. Like, they're just not listening to it. And something else I wrote in drafts that I wanted to communicate to the Horn community, something, because you've talked about the fungus that's spreading, and we've had monkeypox, and the bird flu has gone through and hurt the chicken, hurting the chickens, and raised the price of eggs, and also out here in parts unknown, the bird flu is hitting wild birds, and they're putting down animals that have eaten the dead birds with the flu, and then done tests on them, and they have the bird flu as well, you know, coyotes or mountain lions or bears or whatever that eats those birds. So all that ties into this. There are, I'm going to speak in strictly scientific terms. There are hypotheses out there about disease, and you need to think in terms of heat. You need to think of heat as energy, electricity. Things that power machines. And the hotter this planet gets, the more, it's not more heat, it's more energy in the system. Bigger tornadoes, bigger hurricanes, that type of thing. More energy. There's a hypothesis out there when it comes to diseases that every public health official who knows what they're talking about when it talks about viruses, fungi, and bacteria knows that the hotter it gets, the more diseases you get, which makes perfect sense. But there's some that hypothesize that
incubators are best when they're warmer, right?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of people that believe that trend is linear. So for every degree you go, it gets warmer, you're going to see a 10% increase in diseases. I'm making these numbers up, but that's just what a linear relationship is. But there are some that believe, and I'm in this camp, that it's exponential. So the first half a degree you go up, it goes up 10%. The next half a degree you go up, it goes up 50%. So, and we're seeing events, disease events that are once every 10 years, once every 30 years, once every 100 years, coming faster and faster and faster. So we're either in a pocket of, an outlier pocket of a linear curve, or we are on an exponential curve. And the points we're seeing are fit in what the exponential, which is as it heats up, we're going to see more of these diseases. We're going to see more of these mutations. Insects are able to travel farther and into places where historically people have settled to not get bit by mosquitoes or flies or fleas or ticks. And those critters are moving north in America. You can just look at the statistics. So everything's right to kind of have something come along. And so I'm not simply just monitoring COVID. I'm monitoring these leads that I can see and watching things crop up that are making me highly uncomfortable. Because I saw how we dealt with COVID and how burnt out Americans are about dealing with disease. And I will say this right now. It might be COVID, but it probably be something else. We will have another massive outbreak of something new sometime this decade. That's my scientific prediction.
It would not surprise me. And, you know, it's worth remembering. I guess maybe everybody does remember this, but this is SARS-CoV-2. There was a SARS-CoV-1. And fortunately, it struck at a time when there was a competent president in the White House, and they busted ass to make sure that it didn't get loose. That was Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Gone are the days. Right.
And that proves my point of this was handled inappropriately.
And the problem was Biden did what he could, but he was trying to close the door on a burning barn that the horses had already left.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You know, in terms of fire, the government has a really good, if we're now analogizing fire to disease, the government, the CDC, has a really good fire extinguisher. It's the best fire extinguisher on the market. But at the end of the day, it's only a fire extinguisher. And fires can get big enough for an extinguisher to be useless really quickly. And that's where we are. You got to catch it when it's small and go, psh, and that's what Obama did with SARS-1. It's what he did with Ebola. He had the right advisors, or he just got it. And understood that you just, you know, nip it in the bud and move on before it becomes very expensive and costs you $4 trillion.
And over a million lives.
Yep. So I did want to end on a positive scientific note. In December, last December, there was that fusion story where we achieved fusion energy.
Yes.
And so I just want to tell the horn community on a scientific level, that's the ball game. That's the future. That's everything. Okay. They were able to get 50% return on the energy they put into the reaction. And that was just an experiment. My high school chemistry teacher talked about fusion power, saying that fusion power was viable at a 10% return. This was a 50% return, and we're just getting started. That's an incredible amount of energy. Now, yes, it took 300 units of energy to heat the water, the deuterium, to ignition point. And then it took 2 units of energy to sustain that ignition for the fractions of a second it was going. And it returned three units of energy from it. We had heat absorbers, solar cells. We were capturing the light and the heat to maximize the return. So, you know, $302 to get $3 back does not seem like a good deal. But yes, it costs a lot to ignite it, but you just have to sustain it for 5 minutes to get the full return because however long that 2 to 3 turns is going to be constant. Over time, you're going to make back your ignition and then energy, and then you're going to make, a profit in a sense of on excess energy from the reaction. But at a 50% return, this reaction runs off deuterium, which is heavy water, which is roughly 2% of the world's water. Based on a 50% return, you're talking about in the order of millions or tens of millions more energy in the ocean than oil on Earth. That is more than enough energy to reverse all the damage we've done with fossil fuels. That's more than enough energy to build massive terraforming structures that can suck in air, take out the carbon, and put oxygen back. That's an incredibly energy-sucking reaction on a chemical level to do that. But fusion can provide that energy and do that. And we might not see it in our lifetimes, but our children or our grandchildren may see the day where you have a portable fusion reactor and you can literally power your house as you are today with rainwater.
God, that's beautiful. I wonder, Paul, if it can work within capitalism.
Because
somebody's going to need to get a chalet. A chalet and Stott out of it.
I don't think you can keep it down. I think that either capitalism will just have to move out of the way, or it will adapt, or it will be dead by the time you get there. But if you... in my opinion, a lot of the business models that big businesses are running off of is the drug dealer model from the 80s. The idea is repeat customers. Keep them coming back to buy something. Amazon does it. Grocery stores do it now. Just keep returning the customers. So if you have, in capitalism, if you have a society that can be self-sufficient and doesn't need to buy things from you and doesn't need a power bill or a cable bill or anything else to live, and you can really vote with your dollars, what happens to capitalism when that happens?
Collapses of its own weight?
I don't know. Adapt or die is pretty much the capitalism model.
Yeah, it sounds like what you're describing, Paul, is a sort of a roadmap to the Star Trek future that we all want, and you know, not the dystopian Blade Runner future.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping for. But I'm just excited by the fact that we're starting at 50% return. Like my chemistry teacher back in high school was talking that like one day the first real reaction will get a 2 to 3% return, and that will be enough, and we'll slowly work our way up to a 10% return, and that's when it's economically viable, and maybe someday we could get to 30. We're starting at 50. It's so much more better profitable for energy purposes reaction that makes that the most just to give you an idea, the energy return off like burning coal and stuff is like 10%.
You're right. The thermal value of coal is garbage.
Yeah. So at this experimental stage, it already surpasses any energy return we know by a lot, including nuclear or anything else.
The nice thing about fusion versus fission is the fact that with fusion energy, if you have an accident, you know, a place like Chernobyl is not, you know, poisoned for 1,000 years, or Fukushima.
Yeah, and more importantly, your waste product is helium. Now, hydrogen and helium are the only two gases that are light enough to escape our atmosphere. So when you pop a helium balloon, all that helium leaves the atmosphere, goes out into space, and is gone forever. Hydrogen's a little easier to make because you just need water, and you can do electrolysis and separate the water into hydrogen gas and oxygen gas really easily. And so we can keep getting hydrogen, but we can't get any more helium. We're drilling down into the earth to find pockets. We pull the helium out of there, and those pockets are getting hard to find. And you need helium to make liquid helium, and you need liquid helium to power nuclear magnetic resonance machines that do scientific scanning of molecules. You need helium, liquid helium, for some of the cooling processes of advanced medical technologies, and to super cool magnets for like computer heavy duty computer processors. So helium is becoming a scarce resource that the scientists need. And now you're talking about a power generation system that will give you more helium. That makes scientists even more excited about it.
And here I was thinking that the byproduct would just have us all talking like this. Never mind. That was a bad joke. But it is exciting.
Is very important.
It's exciting, and it's possible. And it may be the only viable future that we have. You mentioned the byproducts of global warming. I have a story here. Steve in New York sent it along to me. It's based on data collected by the Optimum Interpolation Sea Surface Temperature Series from NOAA. And lo and behold, and they don't know why, but just recently, the oceans all over the planet have broken new records, testing new high temperatures for more than a month in an unprecedented run that has led to scientists stating the Earth has reached uncharted territory in the climate crisis.
Yep. This goes back to scientists have different hypotheses about how things work, and we debate them all the time, and we get on our sides, just like politics. And so I'm in a scientific camp that our natural environment is an isometric curve. And what an isometric curve is I want you to picture Tetris block pieces and those little L pieces, and picture one L upside down and another L right side up, and the two short pieces meet in the middle. That's an isometric curve, a steep rise to a flat space, and then another steep rise up. And the steep rise is changes how quickly things change and how fast the environment breaks down. And so the isometric curve theory is basically we are in the Goldilocks zone of the flat space of those two L's, and the x-axis on this graph is global temperature. And as long as you're in that warm space, you're good. But once you get too far outside of it, you get drastic changes on a global scale very, very quickly. And so once you kind of push, you know, it doesn't look like it'll change, and you keep pushing against the environment and keep increasing the temperature, and you're still staying flat. So it gives you the illusion that you could just keep doing this. And if it does change, when it does, it will change slowly enough that you'll be able to recognize it and react to it. That is a false assumption on the isometric curve hypothesis, which, again, that's the camp I'm in, which is it'll keep going, and then suddenly, boom, it all falls apart very quickly. And anyone who has had sort of a traumatic life event, it's sort of the same way. Everything is going fine, and your days are predictable, and everything's going good, and then suddenly you just have a lot of big changes all at once. And so that's my kind of fear there, is that we're going to go from, huh, we've got a problem, to holy shit in a very short period of time. Short period of time being a couple decades.
And for all, that is a short period of time. And in fact, Scary Jerry just said, Blade Runner, Mad Max. You're Paul, Bronx crew to holler greeting. You made me nostalgic for high school chem. Bruce Lane said 10% as well. I wanted to hear Paul's take on bird flu. I've noticed dead birds as well. I was wondering if the bird DNA had jumped. Anyway, I was going to do my 12 monkeys best and head back to the Keys. Can you speak to that?
Yes, bird flu can jump. But yes, bird flu is notorious for jumping species because it's just really another my own thing. It's just a really bad virus. It's just really bad at its job, and the reason that it jumps from species to species is because it is really bad at its job. It just gets lucky. It has one of the highest PFU ratings for diseases, which is particles per infection. So how many virus particles does it take to infect a single cell? On the low end, you've got 3 to 18, which is what like Ebola is. A normal one is like 100, a couple hundred. Flus are 10,000 plus. A vast majority of the viral particles it reproduces are inert because it's just really bad at copying itself. It's so bad at copying itself that occasionally it mutates easily and is able to jump into another species. That's just how it goes.
Damn.
So I do worry about it because it can jump to other species and do damage, which it's already starting to do, which is out here, which is why they're putting down bears and coyotes and stuff that are eating the dead birds. And
oh God,
I mean it's damaging to the bird population, but no one's going to care until it starts affecting humans. But we're all connected. Oh, you know. We rely on the birds for eggs. We rely, like, they're part of the food web. Like, you can't just snuff out and not care about birds on that scale. Because mostly, and bats too, mostly because they also eat insects, which keeps disease spreads in check. Biting flies, mosquitoes, ticks. Those are important things for birds to eat to keep diseases in check. So it's just like a big Jenga column. Like, you know, you keep removing, you keep knocking blocks out of it, eventually the tower falls over.
With disastrous consequences. Well, no, you got another note from our pal Micah, and she said going back to the economics discussion, she said our regional VP made it very clear on a meeting Monday how they felt about our U.S. operations. They can hire 4 people in India for every one of us. And
yep.
And then as to the proliferation of noxious things as a result of climate change, she said, we're already dealing with more tick problems up here simply because it's not getting cold enough in the wintertime to kill them off.
Yep. And then combine that with bark beetles that are destroying trees that do trap carbon, which is important, but you also need them for your lumber industry. I mean, it's and more forest fires. We're heading in a not fun direction, and there's, you know, I just go by an old proverb that my dad told me, which is a politician's incapable of solving any problem that is going to happen after their election, after the next election.
No, your father is a wise man, and it's I think that the corollary to that is a politician is unable to address any issue that might affect his one of his wealthier constituents' wallets.
Yeah, and I guess I would like to see someone in, and there's probably a reason that they're not allowed on TV. I would like to see a TV personality. I guess we all would. That would say things that I would say in that situation. And I'm sure people in my family would like people in the politics to say things that they would say in the situation. And what hits my mind every time they go campaign donations or whatever, and they explain to me how it's not a bribe, my mind goes, that just sounds like bribery with extra steps. And that's what I call it. When anyone like campaign donations, yeah, I go, do you mean bribery without steps? Because that's what it is. And it doesn't make me popular, but I think that's what it is. And I'm confident that that's what it is because no one has had a conversation with me to give me a decent response to that statement of why it's not that way.
That's because it is that way.
They just get mad and stop talking.
And remember, it was a lot of years ago now, but Anthony Kennedy, the Supreme Court justice who infamously suddenly decided that he heard his mother calling and had to resign from the Supreme Court, make way for Brett Kavanaugh. He wrote in an opinion years ago now that just because somebody gives money to a politician and the politician does something to benefit the person who gave the money doesn't mean it's bribery.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the kind of thing that somebody take it, you know, it's not bribery, is something that someone taking bribes says.
Yeah.
It's not that heavy a lift to sort out.
Yeah, and I don't. Judge is not the right word, but I mean, I empathize with the politicians. I don't think I could do I could do different in their shoes given the environment. You know, the lobbyists go in there and they show you the commercials they're going to run against you if you don't do what they want. You tell yourself you're gonna vote yes on these two really bad laws, so you can get others to vote yes on the two laws you think is important, that are really important, that will make a difference in your district or in your state if you're a senator. So, like, I understand that deals have to be made and compromises have to be made, and that's the nature of the game. But the game has become corrupt because you can't turn against your contributors or you're done. But if you don't turn against your contributors, just hasn't become evident yet.
It will, though. Yeah. It most assuredly will. So
it will.
So your advice is to monitor cautiously as far as the your next booster is concerned. Try to get yourself as far into the cold weather season as you can.
Yep.
And you're still very much pro mask.
Very much. Right now it helps with the allergies. Having tree pollen allergy issues.
Oh, God.
Big time.
Yeah.
So that's helpful.
Yeah. My white car, in addition to being rolling on bad skins. It also has this sort of lovely green shade to it as it gets every time this year, time every year. And if it's on the car,
And I'm a little bit more liberal with it, but with taking the mask off than I have been. I keep it on at work. I keep it on in grocery stores. I don't keep it on when I go order coffee from the coffee stand when I'm walking the dog anymore. When the weather's good and I'm outside and the sun's shining. So I have laxed a bit, but the precautions I take is because we have an immunocompromised member in our family bubble that we can't put at risk. We have a Dan Fisher. So my family's needs are different than other people's. So,
let me ask you one final question, because, you know, you're in the credits at the end of the show every night, 15 to 20 feet, like Paul from Parts Unknown says. Is it still 15 to 20 feet where possible?
In the winter months, I'd say yes. It's definitely going to keep you safe, as safe as you can be. If you are not vaccinated for whatever reason, I would say keep the mask on and keep your distance from people to 15 to 20 feet. If you've had some booster shots, if you've already had COVID, you can relax in hot, dry seasons and anything that's not raining and above 70 degrees, basically, and the sun shining. You're good to, be in normal talking range, maybe 5 feet away from people at an everyday type of situation. I definitely mask up and keep my distance from people that you know have been sick or are currently sick with something. They don't know what it is. So just as a precaution. But other than that, you can relax a little bit.
Well, it's kind of a relief. I mean, we can enjoy the summer months and be out and social and... Okay.
But if someone, you know, if if you're going to events and you know there are adults there that are not going to be vaccinated, probably put your mask on. If I'll be honest, I'm walking around outside right now without my mask on. Weather's good. Someone want to talk to me? I wouldn't have a problem. If that someone's wearing a Make America Great Again hat, I go, hold on, I got to put my mask on.
Yeah, no kidding. And is the standard still the N95 and the KN95?
Yep, that's the way to go. But again, even the AMT3, the surgical ones with the blue on one side and that white on the inside, even those, I mean, that's something. And that could make the difference. But yeah, I haven't seen anything getting legs under it, the need to send out a flare, whether it be another variant or the fungus or the bird flu. But
if anything pops up on the threat board, we'll be the first to know, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that something will pop up on the threat board. Either it'll be in something new or another variant of COVID will come out or something. And you'll hear about it on the news. But right now, at least near where I'm living in, hospitalization rates are going down. You know, I don't think we'll ever be over it, but we'll have periods of relaxation, and we're entering one right now. But keep your masks handy. They come in handy for allergies.
They
come in handy for smoke. They say for smoke if you live in an area that's going to have forest fires over a hot, dry summer. So just keep them handy. Think of them as umbrellas. You got them in your house. Oh, it's raining. Time to put it on.
That's a great analogy. Paul, I'm so glad you called in. It's so good to hear from you. I do think about you often, and I know the Horn family does too, and we're so grateful for all the information that you share.
You're very welcome, and it's good to be part of the community, and it's good to hear from everyone, and I hope things go well. I haven't caught up on the podcast, but I hope everything went okay with Ferg and his Tough Man competition in the sense that he did not die.
No, he did not. He just got himself a brand new shiny concussion. He took one right on the chin at the end of the first round and learned all about gravity. Landed on the mat. Felt like crap for a couple of days.
Did someone tell him the boxer parable? Everyone's got a plan until they get hit.
Yeah, truth. Yeah. Unfortunately, he really enjoyed it. So, mm-hmm. And the guy who cleaned his clock in the first fight went on to win the whole thing in his weight class. So he feels better about that.
Well. You said he was a bit standoffish when you try to talk to him, but if I could talk to him, I would tell him that I asked my dad once if I really liked the idea of skydiving. So I asked my dad once if he ever skydived, and he said, I really wanted to do it, but I became a parent. And when you become a parent, it's not just risking yourself, it's risking everyone in their future. And that's something you got to have in mind when you make decisions like that. And when you put yourself in harm's way, don't do it for selfish reasons.
Yeah. And for that matter, why would you want to jump out? Why would anybody want to jump out of a perfectly good airplane? But no,
that's fun.
That's why we went from Porsche to minivan many, mm-hmm. many years ago. Because
exactly.
Porsches are not good for carrying kids.
Yes.
But
car seat will only fit in those bucket seats for so long.
Exactly.
In the back.
Yeah. So my best to the puppies and to the happy mother. And
yeah,
I hope, you know, thanks for doing that. Just, you know, little acts of little random acts of decency make the world a better place, Paul. You know that.
Thank you. And just to bring light on something that people may not know, between over the course of the entire pandemic and now as we lean into a bad economy, people are abandoning dogs at a very high rate. which is one of the reasons we got involved in fostering. Rescues were putting out emergency pleas for fosters, contacting, telling every volunteer they have to call every friend that they could think of to see if they wanted to be a foster, because the rate of dog abandonment is like doubled and doubled again. It's just, it's, there's so many dogs out there. They're just, you know, people evict out of apartment and they can't take their dog with them and they just leave their dog in the street.
Oh, how heartbreaking. How heartbreaking.
Yeah. And
the same with cats.
A lot of, shelters, homeless shelters have rules. Some of those shelters say no pets. And so, some people give up their dogs just so they can participate in like a charity program to get back on their feet, which is a very hard decision for a lot of people to make, because that's like one of the last things you have that's important to you that you've got to give up after your life's been washed away. And the fact that they can be adopted out and go to a good home, and you know that they have a good ending to their story rather than just, oh, you left them out on the street and who knows what happened to them. It's not okay. So if you can help out with that, or that's something that interests you, there's quite a need out there still.
Well, thanks, listen, you take care. It was great talking to you, Paul. My best to you, and I look forward to the next time we get a chance to talk.
Me too. I might have to ride in and find the time, because this crack in the whip of my job is not going away anytime soon.
I doubt it. Yeah. Well, you take care and give our best to your family.
I will. Thank you, Robin. Have a good one.
Sure, Paul. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
The one and only Paul from Parts Unknown. What a great conversation for this evening. I don't have a lot of time left in the program, but I got to send out huge, huge thanks to our dear, dear friend, Haley. Thank you, honey. Thank you so much. Haley just took care of both challenges, both Charlene and Rogue's Island's challenge and Ralph's challenge. So we are now officially down to 1620 to finish the month. Let me try to do this. I hate when folks don't get to talk and they want to talk. So give me just a second here. And again, thank you, Charlene. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you so very much to Haley. Thank you to Felicia, formerly of Nebraska and now of Southern California. It is all so very helpful in just trying to keep this all going. And thank you to Claire across the pond. It is, so 1595. I'm sorry, 1595. Thank you, Claire. So basically, that's a week. We're down a week's worth of funding with basically 2 days of program left to go. And let's run over and check in with Scott real quick. I've got to knock off because I just realized this is, you know, this isn't an audio only, so I've got to go and slap some spackle on my face and get camera presentable. Yeah, it is. Randy Radar says, hey, it's Plymouth Rock territory. And now we're down into, I don't know, what was going on in 1595? The horror of the Spanish genocide in Spain and Peru and the Portuguese genocide in Brazil. But anyway, let's check in with Scott real quick. Hey, Scott.
Buttons, knobs, switches, and dials. Radio is my life.
Yes. What going on down here?
Well, I just got home. I had a specialist appointment at the eye doctor. And apparently I have a big old honking cataract on my left eye.
Oh, no. Well, I guess it's that time, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. So they've got me set up for surgery. The soonest, he only does them on Tuesdays. So they're going to do it the first week, I think, in June.
Is it messing with you much?
Well, see, I thought it was because my glasses were out of date, way out of date.
No, it's your eyes. Yeah. Your eyes are out of date, Scott.
Yeah, that's what it is. Glasses are fine. The eyes are out.
It's like my tire warranty. I mean, we know it's there.
Oh, God, did you ever get out? I guess you did get out of tire hell, more or less.
No, I'm still there. What? Hopefully at 7 o'clock on Friday morning, Roy will give me the answers that I need.
Oh, yes. He's got a little patch over his left pocket on his shirt. Does it say Roy? Is it embroidered and everything?
I honestly don't know, but I just need him to be able to get my totally legitimate, real live, no kidding warranty out of machine A and into machine B.
Works for me.
Cross your fingers. You're going to love this. Something broke right as I was wrapping up with Paul. They finally, because, you know, everybody was all abuzz with this on Monday and completely owned the news cycle. We finally found out what it was that testicle-toasting Tuckio Rose Carlson, man of masculinity, did that got him the boot.
Wait a minute, let me guess. Now, the obvious answer is he's an asshole, okay? But that doesn't get you fired over at Fox. So tell me, what did they find out now?
I'm about to use a word that I don't like. It's apparent. It's okay to use in, say, the UK and Australia, et cetera, but it's not okay in the United States. He called the CEO of Fox in an email a cunt.
I dare, sweet, merciful Jesus.
Jesus, look at the time.
I was going to ask if it started with C, because that's usually the go-to word for those people.
And what's more, he was mucking about in the discovery for the Dominion case, and he told his, according to a story in the Wall Street Journal, Carlson did not want the damning message redacted from the lawsuit. He told his colleagues that he wanted the world to know what he had said about the executive in a private message.
Oh, fiercely proud of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jesus.
And his resentment toward the executive, you know, her being a woman and all, was deep and enduring. And the fact that this was reported by the Wall Street Journal, which is also owned by Rupee, says everything. So, and I mean, it's the details now are just delicious.
So they're thinking that that was the final straw. It wasn't necessarily a...
Oh, there were many straws, but the hilarious thing is that they told Tuckio Rose that he was shit canned 10 minutes before they sent out the press release.
Oh, I love it. See, timing like that, you just, unless you work in radio, you have no idea what timing like that is.
And so I think it was Brian Kilmeade that filled in for him on Monday night.
Yeah.
What?
I think you're right.
I'm doing what? I work in the mornings. I'm not an evening drive guy.
Oh, yeah. Well, I couldn't think of any better people or any worse people I'd like to see scrambling, you know, having to dance with late-breaking changes. Fuck them.
And you can almost hear Rupee saying, ah, you know, I can say that way, but he's an American. He can't say it.
So
that was old Crocodile Kincaid there, for anybody who's wondering.
How did Kilmeade do? Was he like a deer in the headlights look on his puss?
All he had to do was read from the teleprompter, and at the beginning of the program he said, yeah, our friend and colleague Tucker Carlson's out of here. I consider myself a friend of Tucker, you know, we wish him well. Here's an apple and a road map.
Yeah. Jesus.
Maybe it was a road apple.
Oh, yes, a road apple. Okay. So, yeah, am I getting the impression that you're going to be on the television pretty soon?
No, it's just a Zoom video Q&A for Devil Put the Coal in the Ground.
Oh, okay. So when does that happen? Because I just now tuned in.
It happens 25 minutes from now.
All right. Well, I won't keep you. I just wanted to let you know of the latest adventure in my otherwise neglected life.
Your life of indolent boredom is... I think it needs to... Your life of indolent boredom needs to go in for regrooving, Scott.
Well, I need to go. Never mind my life. I'll go in for regrooving. The rest of it sort itself out without too much of a lift. you know, heavy or otherwise.
Little tiny eye doctor regrooving machine in there.
You know, as I think about the situation over there at Fox Canoes, we need somebody skilled in veterinary medicine and take care of that poor camel, because all those straws, and apparently old Tucky pulled the next to last one, which got him jettisoned. So somebody see to the camel. Maybe if it's a boy camel, get it a truss or something, because that thing is...
Wait a minute. God damn it.
Because he's going to be walking funny.
Good God. What poor bastard would get the job of putting the truss on the camel? They're not known for their pleasant disposition.
And then taking it off each evening to bathe them or whatever. Did I ever tell you the story?
Camel bathing? There's another shitty job.
This was in your Middle Eastern part of the world. And this fellow had him a camel, and he had him a three-legged stool, and he'd sit behind the camel, and he would make his money giving accurate time without benefit of a watch or a sundial or anything like that, just sitting behind the camel on a little three-legged stool. And people marveled. They'd come from far and wide. And finally, the authorities got on to him and said, look, you've got to be taking money under false pretenses. You better show us the trick or we're going to take you in. So basically, figure this, the camel, the three-legged stool behind, what he would do as a male camel, he would reach under and move the dangly bits, and off in the distance you'd see a clock in a tower. And that's how he was always able to give the correct time. So let that be a lesson to your camel, the dangly...
Camel chronographers.
Exactly, yes. Yes, the big...
Well, Billable Rick sent you a message and said, can you please give Scotty my best wishes on the regrooving of his eyes? I hope that the cat attracts, are safely removed, and that the local squirrels don't pop into Scotty's eyes.
The squirrels? No, nobody, I read the brochure, nobody said anything about squirrels, so they sent me home.
It's in the fine print, and you can't read it because of your cat attracts.
Oh, and I'll let you go right after this. I wish you could see the thing they sent me home with. I was smart enough to bring my Blu-ray... my clip-on sunglasses, but they sent me home. You unfurl them, and they're just like plastic, like clear plastic, but they're dark. They're shades. Shit, I dropped it, and I was rolled under the chair. But anyway, you unfurl these and supposed to put them behind your glasses. Well, I said, screw that, because I don't want to look like that character on one of the later Star Treks with a band around my eyes, you know, because that's what it looks like, more or less, except it's not metallic.
Right.
And I'd be enough of a goon on the bus coming home from today's appointment without that. So I was smart enough to bring my clip-on sunglasses, which I forget what they're called, but they have that blue coloring so that everything looks blue until you take them off. You probably saw them advertised years ago. But anyway, well, listen, good luck on your little media thing. And if you see the camel, wave to him. And I'm going to sit here and kind of veg out for a little bit and contemplate my future.
Your future, your navel. I mean, there's plenty to contemplate there in lovely San Diego.
Yeah, well, there is. And I'm. It probably sounds like I'm complaining about having to go in for the eye thing, but I'm not. I have insurance.
I hear it's a completely painless procedure.
That's what I hear. And it's just, the only trouble is they won't send me home in a cab. So I've got to work something out with getting a ride home afterwards, an hour or two after the thing's over. But otherwise, it's my latest adventure. I'm going to run out of parts before they run out of specialists.
You're Martin Balsam in Little Big Man.
Oh, yeah, God, yes. I have got to rewatch that movie. I watched, the hell was it I watched the other night? Oh, God, it was a classic. It was, Sunset Boulevard.
Duh.
With Gloria Swanson and who played the male lead? William Holden.
William Holden.
Oh, God, what a fucking movie that was. I had forgotten just how good that movie is.
And the Carol Burnett send-up was equally genius.
Yes, it was. And speaking of Carol, tonight on NBC, her 90th birthday is being celebrated in a two-hour special.
Oh, wow.
Why it wasn't on CBS, her longtime network home, I don't know. But it's tonight on NBC, and I've got it set to record because I love her. I've always loved her. Going back to her days with Gary Moore and Durwood Kirby. If you even remember those two names, that's pretty much where she got her beginning. On a daytime show that aired on CBS in the late 50s, early 60s.
Yes. Well, I do got to get out of here because I got 15 minutes to do a full face of makeup.
Makeup.
Whap. Yeah, I wish it was that easy.
All right, well, take care, Robin, and take care of Horn family, and I'll be in better spirits next time I call.
You are always a little ray of sunshine. Scott, have a good evening.
Thank you, I will, and you do likewise to everybody you know.
Yeah, thank you kindly. Later.
Bye. Bye.
And so, yeah, I hate to knock off early, but I got to. But we should have a regular, ordinary, absolutely typical program tomorrow. Fingers crossed. And then Friday morning, waiting for Roy. Thanks, everybody. Thank you to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thank you to Ralphs. And thank you to Charlene for their help this evening. Thank you to those of you who answered the challenges. Thank you so much. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff in the chat room this evening. Thank you, Roger. I didn't see if Steve showed up. Give me just a second to look. Yeah, there's Steve. Soup! Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Roger. Thank you to our news ninjas. Good to hear from you, Gene. Please like and subscribe on the podcast. Leave a comment. Share it with your friends. Let's build this little community so that it's maybe not so little. Press the like button there at TuneIn Radio, and we'll eventually get to 1,000 unique listeners. I don't know if TuneIn will sit up and take notice then, but anyway, please. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia at a proud union shop. You know the drill. Stay safe. You done heard from Paul from Parts Unknown. Get your booster. If you're around maggots, put that mask on because they're a filthy lot. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Use your hand sanitizer. Carry it with you. Pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance. You can let up a little bit in the warm weather. But if it's still cold, 15 to 20 feet still makes sense. And some man of masculinity comes down the sidewalk towards you, muttering, "That!" Well, avoid that testicle toaster like the plague, because he is. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later.